Hello everyone, welcome to the Women's Coach Development Podcast. This episode is a conversation with Dawn Scott on how and why football coaches might consider players' menstrual cycles in their coaching practice. I'm Amy Price, I'm a Women's National Coach Developer, and I'm lucky to be joined by Abby Sadler as one of our coaches today in the conversation. So Abby, would you like to just introduce your role?
Yeah, so my role is a coach at Bristol City Women's WSL Academy team, so assistant coach in there alongside my full-time job at the FA Women's High Performance Centre.
Perfect, and I'm also joined by Dan Waldron. So Dan, would you mind telling us what you do?
I'm a coach from the 13 Girls Grassroots team in Wiltshire, but I'm also a PE teacher and head of Year 7 at a secondary school.
And of course, we're also joined by Dawn Scott. So Dawn, would you mind explaining to us what you currently do?
Yeah, sure. I'm the physical performance manager for the England senior women's football team. So kind of monitor anything from a physical perspective with the players, obviously in conjunction with the whole MDT around the team.
Brilliant. OK, so we've obviously purposefully selected our coaches, Abby and Dan, because they're quite contrasting in terms of their roles. So we think this will make for quite an interesting conversation with Dawn. And the purpose of the podcast is to, well, it's got a lot of purposes. So firstly, to build awareness of the menstrual cycle and the ways in which it can impact people in different ways. I'd like to confirm and deny some ways in which the menstrual cycle or management of menstrual cycle might impact player performance and wellbeing. Also, just the main aspects of our conversation are how to think about the menstrual cycle with players, coaches and parents, player and coach relationships, menstrual cycle symptoms, psychosocial considerations of the menstrual cycle, injury management, the role of education, and players taking responsibility for their well-being and wellness, and also considerations for the coach on match days and training. So hopefully that's given you a little bit of an overview of the conversation ahead of us. And I'd just like to start by asking you, Dawn. So you've obviously worked in this domain for a long time now. So how do you feel coaches' understanding of the menstrual cycle has evolved?
Yeah, I mean, I think first thing we need to appreciate is that the menstrual cycle is one element of a player's performance. But obviously, with a fluctuation of the hormones every single day, it's something that the players do deal with and have to consider every day. I'd say the other piece is the menstrual cycle is kind of one part of the overall female health monitoring that we would do around the players. If we then think about coaches' understanding, I'd say it's definitely better. There's definitely an increased awareness. And obviously there's more visibility recently in the media and literature. There's been an increase in research studies. It's definitely been discussed more and highlighted. You know, I know Steph Horton last year was part of an initiative around kind of the visibility of poverty period in terms of making products more available for those who maybe can't afford to buy such products. But for me, even though we've kind of improved and increased the visibility, I think there's so much more to be done, and there's so much further that we can go with it, and basically to make it less of a taboo and make it something that, you know, is something that can be a discussion similar to any other part of a player's performance. It should just be one element that can be discussed with the coaches or with the support staff around the player in terms of that player's performance.
So thanks for that, Dawn. I just want to go into Abby now, because obviously you're working in the game at WSL Academy level. Is it players aged 16 to 21?
Yeah.
Roughly? So... Mm-hmm. So how is it spoken about and handled, and, you know, what's the level of awareness in your context with the menstrual cycle?
Yeah, I guess we changed it slightly over the last kind of 12 months or so, based on what Dawn said around there being lots of conversations around it and people speaking around it a little bit more, and actually how it may or could affect performance. So we have kind of a wellness which players will complete every day, regardless whether they're in training or not. Which kind of says things around like soreness, tiredness, how well they slept. And then we've added into it now around like their due date, so when they're due on the period. But that's kind of about all we're at. But I guess we see the players quite often, which is maybe different to kind of Dan's context. So we see them quite often. So they will quite openly speak around, got period pains, I'm unwell, like, because of the regard. I also coach with a coach called Dan as well, a male coach, and they will open up to him too around how they feel. But I guess that's because we see them quite a lot. So those relationships have been built up over time. But I know there's probably some other things we could go out there and use, some other kind of apps and stuff. But for now, that's all we do, I guess, based on just time. And we can have lots of information, but I guess, what do we do with it? And I guess it kind of brings me on to maybe a question to you, Dawn, around, so we get the due dates for the players, but can you explain how the whole of the monthly cycle might impact players in different ways?
Yeah, for sure. I think, like I alluded to before, across the whole cycle, there's a continual fluctuation of the hormones, largely the estrogen and progesterone. Literally for any player, a whole menstrual cycle can vary anywhere from 25 to 35 days. The median for the general population is 28 days. So across those days, those hormones are continually interacting and fluctuating. I'd say there's very much an individual support, an individual focus is essential, because the symptoms and the severity are very different and very individual between any player, any female. So I think that's the first thing. Also, you know, symptoms are very different at different times, again, due to the different hormone levels and the interactions, and also the changes that they cause physiologically in the body. So again, it's important to monitor the full cycle so that you know which symptoms players are experiencing at which times, and then based on that, you can then try to reduce the severity or the extent of those symptoms at that stage of the cycle. So I think it's great that you're monitoring the kind of the due date, the first date, and probably 3-4 years ago, that was kind of how I started, in terms of at least monitor the start date and look at typically what is a menstrual cycle length for any individual player. And also, you know, how often are they having the cycles? Are they missing any cycles? So anything like that. I think the other thing that we've done is, if you look at any typical physiological textbook or some of the literature, they talk about having 2 or 3 phases in the cycle. Now, what we've found is, again, from monitoring the players and their symptoms, typically in the 4 to 5 days before the onset of menses, the bleed phase, we do see an increase in symptoms. So I know that's one thing that Georgie Bruvels has kind of proposed, a 4-phase model, because she has split that phase from mid-cycle to the start of menses into 2 phases, because in that 4 to 5 days before the cycle, there is a change. So I think that's one thing. And then I think if we look at, you know, what are some of the main symptoms, which I think, again, then link back into the performance of the player, some of the key symptoms we see are change in mood state or anxiety, increase in fatigue, increase in muscle soreness, increase in disturbed sleep, which, again, if you think about those combined, can actually reduce the recovery of a player and actually put them in an increase. So it's not necessarily the mechanism of the hormones per se that might then cause the player to be less recovered. It's more those different elements kind of adding together and potentially having an impact on reduced recovery for players. So again, I think it's important to know the typical menstrual cycle length of any player, the typical symptoms and severity they experience, and then really looking at how do you support each individual player based on the symptom experience.
Dawn, that's a really extensive answer, and I'm sure, like, for a lot of the people listening, we'd never considered the menstrual cycle in that much detail before, and how individualized, like you've said, it is for every player. Dan, so coming from a grassroots coaching perspective and being male, how's all of the stuff that Dawn's just said there, how's it for you? Like, how are you feeling based upon that, and what's it like in your coaching context?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite overwhelming, really, to hear all of that and everything that's actually considered at an elite level and an adult level. But I think for me, the big issue was awareness and confidence. I mean, it was something that I'd never considered as a coach until I did a CPD thing with Abby about the menstrual cycle. And the only thing I've done since then was go back and have a discussion with the other two male coaches that I work with about how it affects us. But I think in terms of for us at the moment, it's very much a confidence thing. Obviously, we're at an age where anything in terms of mood changes, things like that, I generally put down to it being a Friday and it being the end of a school week. So I know, for example, that this week was an issue because they'd not played for 6 weeks. But I think for us, it's a confidence thing to start that discussion. So Dawn, I was wondering, obviously, you've worked with lots of different coaches at all levels. But do you have any advice for someone like me that in a way that we can introduce the dialogue, especially with male coaches, about the menstrual cycle?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I think one is, like you've just alluded to there, is the education piece is, like I said, there's an increasing body of either research papers or, if you like, more reader-friendly information around the menstrual cycle. So I think that's one thing. I think, like you've just said there, Dan, like your own drive for self-learning, but then also self-discovery, and that you being aware that you're male and that can cause a little bit of kind of a play to be uncomfortable to talk about it because of that male female. Well, for me, like, we strip it back, whether you're male or not, I think there's a little bit of apprehension from female players to talk about it because it is something that has never been spoken about before. So again, I think that's where having those players like a Steph Horton, you know, Megan Rapinoe after the World Cup last year kind of openly mentioned it. So I think a younger player seeing a player of that kind of level talking about it, I think makes it open. I think the other piece then is you knowing your players and knowing their comfort level of talking about it. You know, some I'm sure will openly talk about it. Some might have to be more of a kind of smaller group discussion to have them talk about it. So I think it's knowing your players, kind of knowing how you approach that with them in terms of their openness, their comfort level of it. I think, again, being comfortable having those conversations and making it a safe environment so that players and your other staff can speak about it. I do think in terms of this topic and in female football, I think having a female member of staff on the group, I think, is important because of the sensitivity of this topic. And then, like I said, for me, it's kind of one element of a player's preparation or performance. So again, I think longer term, my aim, my ambition is that this can be the same conversation as, you know, recovery methods or your strength training or your aerobic. And I think that's what we have to aspire to get to, is that it becomes a topic that we can openly talk about because, you know, as women, as females, every single day, those hormones are fluctuating and it's something that happens in our body. And, you know, it's not this thing that shouldn't be spoken about. It's a natural occurrence in a woman's body. So, you know, I think it's that education, knowing your players, engaging with them, obviously, depend on the age of the players, engaging the parents, the guardians, if they're the ones as well who need to be aware of some of these elements, if they're going to help with the reducing some of the symptoms. And then I think if we talk about maybe the younger players, again, it's maybe the language used with the younger players in terms of them understanding it as much as, say, your 16, 17 year old, you know, your younger players who've gone through the puberty 12 to 14 years, kind of their language might be a little bit different.
Can I just pick up on that, Dawn, with you? Because I'm glad you spoke about younger players and older players, because I think that's like a really, really important consideration for coaches because of the levels of maturity and comfortableness or uncomfortableness that players might have around talking about this stuff with their coach. And I think what I'm hearing is a lot of this sort of boils down to the relationship that the coach has with the players. And I guess that having the empathy and like showing a genuine care and interest in the players as people, which is why we might end up speaking about the menstrual cycle, because the coach cares so much for the players and is professional at the same time with it, which is really important. So I don't know, there's nothing really, no question that I have in relation to that, but I just think it's important maybe for the coaches listening in terms of consideration of that coach player relationship. And it obviously takes time, doesn't it, Dawn, to build that trust?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's symptomatic of the whole evolution of the women's game. Like, again, you look at I don't know, again, Jill Scott, Steph Horton, who, when they started playing football, there wasn't the professional league there. There wasn't the aspiration to be a professional player because that didn't exist. And also even like how sports science has evolved in that whole time, there's probably things that these days for the younger player are automatic things they do because they've had it throughout their whole pathway from being young. Like when I was a young girl growing up, there wasn't the opportunity to play for a team or to play football. So I would just play in the street with the boys and that's all I ever knew. And, you know, I've heard Faye White, Kelly Smith say the same in terms of kind of their era, whereas girls these days can go to an organised team kind of club set up from, you know, guys know that better than me, but from early ages. So there's things that they do now or that are automatic that some of those more the older players didn't have that opportunity enough. And this is how I feel with the menstrual cycle, that if we can now make it an a topic that is provided as an education, is spoken about, is not taboo, that actually in 5 years down the line we're going to look back and go, wow, I can't even believe we were having those conversations, because it's actually just part of their preparation, similar to a warm-up or a strength session or a tactical set play session. So I think that's, for me, the overall aim is to make it such a subject that actually, you know, it's not something that we overly highlight, because actually it's just another element of their preparation.
I love that. I think that's definitely the goal. So I guess now moving on to a little bit more of the stuff that's been seen in the headlines with the menstrual cycle, because a lot of coaches listening would have seen at Chelsea Women's being in the media in terms of them implementing some of this stuff. And obviously, Dawn, the work that you've done in the US and now England. So the media has, I feel, maybe has gravitated towards this idea that managing menstrual cycle means that you win gold medals and it means that you win leagues. That's massively exaggerated. So I guess the question I'm asking is, how true is it really, and what are the misunderstandings?
I think, again, it goes back to like female health. Menstrual cycle is one element of a player's performance, or one element of their preparation. And, you know, you could probably, between us here, thinking about the kind of four corner model, there's probably 100, 200 elements that impact a player's performance. So again, I think that this is where the menstrual cycle is one. And I think the thing again is, you know, if we can manage those symptoms, reduce the severity of those symptoms, then ultimately some of the strategies you would put in place are actually just good strategies that a female player, a player would actually be following and be doing. And some of those strategies simply help to accelerate recovery, make the player more recovered, which ultimately, whether it's related to the menstrual cycle or not, actually means that they're potentially ready for a better performance. So again, I think it comes back to, what are the symptoms that players experience? When in their cycle do they experience them? And again, like I said, some of the key ones that we found with players are mood state, anxiety. So kind of mood state being changed in the 3 to 4 days pre-menses, a bit of anxiety around, I guess, probably more linked to feeling more fatigued, feeling more sore, having disturbed sleep. You know, I know myself, if I get disturbed sleep, I feel anxious, and you know, you don't feel recovered until you've had a good night of sleep again. And then there's other things, you know, typically players experience cravings in terms of kind of food intake. We've had players, their concentration has kind of been affected. And again, if you just have that, if you're not tracking that in terms of a concentration piece, you're like, is it just related to kind of everyday life? When you start tracking it and see the same pattern at the same time stage every single month, then actually, you know, it is more likely to be due to the menstrual cycle. And then other things we see are players report sore back. We've also seen that if players have had kind of chronic injuries, whether it's, you know, previous ACL injury or anything like that, we actually see it in, again, seems to be in that phase four, that the severity of that knee is more sore in that time. So there's kind of an increase in inflammation. And then the other ones, which are probably the most the common things that have maybe been raised in the media or in the press generally are kind of stomach cramps or a general kind of symptom and heavy menstrual bleeding, which can have an impact in terms of kind of iron losses, blood losses, but then also a bit of anxiety around players. There was an article recently about players being anxious about wearing white shorts if they know they kind of have heavy menstrual bleeding. So again, I think if they're kind of some of the symptoms, how can we reduce each one? Like, what are the strategies we can put in place? And ultimately, if you can reduce the impact of some of those symptoms, then you're getting the player better recovered, better prepared to then actually perform. So again, it's for me just good behaviours of players, of females, in terms of reducing those symptoms to be ready to perform.
And off the back of that, Dawn, I guess you might have covered it slightly in my last question as well, around kind of injury management as well. So you spoke there a lot about like recovery and the sleep and how that might impact upon kind of performance. Is that similar to kind of managing injury? Because again, in the media, there's been quite a lot around is ACL ligament linked to menstrual cycle and other stuff which people would have kind of read in the papers and stuff. So what's your thoughts on that?
Again, like for me, if saying that phase four and phase one are the times when the players have the most severe symptoms and they're not doing anything to manage them, whether those symptoms are related to menstrual cycle or just poor diet, poor recovery, actually your players are at an increased injury risk. So it's not necessarily for me the interaction of the hormones at that stage. Again, you know, there's been research in the past suggested that the ligaments are looser or things like that. I think it's more if players are having, let's say they have all 10 of those symptoms that I've just highlighted and they're not doing anything to reduce them. Well, you know, if you've got disturbed sleep, like you're not recovered and you're already tired, your coordination's going to be off. You're going to be at an increased risk of injury. If your muscles are more sore, you're more fatigued and you're not doing any more recovery, you're in an increased risk of injury. So again, I think that's one thing. I think the other time point is almost mid-cycle, when ovulation, which literally is when there's an increase in estrogen, that has been a time point when it's suggested there potentially is an increased risk of injury. But again, for me right now, we don't have the research to really back that up. So again, I think that's where we need more research. You know, again, injuries, you do and don't want the research to kind of get some good research, a large cohort of injuries, but obviously you don't want that because that means your players are getting injured. So again, I think it's that whole symptom management of if you can get your players more recovered, better prepared, then actually you're kind of reducing the chance that they will get the risk of injury.
Sorry, just wanted to add to that. Obviously, with us, for sort of grassroots level, it's less about elite performance and less about the physical stuff. Yeah. And it's a lot about sort of the social benefits and the psychological side of things. What do you think sort of the benefits for grassroots would be for acknowledging the cycles of the players, especially at a young age?
But I think it's similar, Dan. Whether they're about kind of grassroots or the elite performer, I still think... yeah, you could say from a social element, like, I still think it's about, you know, if you've got those symptoms and they're quite severe, kind of that affects you in everyday life, not just in sport. Because even if you're at school and, you know, you've got severe menstrual cramps or you've not slept well, actually your concentration's going to be poor. And, you know, if I'm sat in your lesson, I'm probably not going to be listening as much because I'm more tired or more fatigued. So, you know, I still think it has an effect because, again, you know, it's whether you're the elite performer or the grassroots, like if you're less recovered or you're more sore or you're more tired, like it has an impact regardless of where you are on that spectrum. And again, similar to this being a conversation that in 5 years is just one other element of the performance. Again, I think, you know, reaching kind of globally, that if a girl somewhere in a country where it's forbidden to talk about this can see some kind of education or kind of one of the role models, one of those elite players talking about it, I think it becomes a conversation that they are comfortable to then have.
So Dawn, just on that, you were talking about the symptoms and obviously like over time a player might track their symptoms and start to see maybe consistency or patterns in the types of symptoms they have. So for someone that's starting scratch, a coach that's never done this before with players, yeah, how much time would a player need to be tracking this to actually be certain that they know what their symptoms are at what time of the month?
Yeah, I mean, I think you want at least 3 or 4 months of kind of cycles. So 3 or 4 cycles to really know, you know, one isn't going to tell you enough. So probably 3 to 4 is then going to give a good pattern. I think the other piece, it then raises the awareness of the player or the female that actually this time, you know, every month I am kind of getting this symptom. So I think that's one thing. I'd encourage any player or kind of anybody working with the players to kind of get access to apps or to include it in part of your wellness monitoring so that you start to then see those patterns. Again, there's kind of so many free apps out there that can be used by players. And again, I think that's just, for me, like good habits of a player, a bit like, you know, they've all got their fancy watches that might track their sleep overnight and they'll kind of sync it to the phone in the morning and they'll look at it. So for me, why are you not doing that in relation to your menstrual cycle? And, you know, I look back at me in my day and it wasn't spoken about probably at school. I maybe had one lesson in biology about menstrual cycle and, you know, I don't even remember anything about that. So again, I think it's that education, awareness and being interested in it. Like I say, there's so many apps. I mean, a few out there are some interesting names. There's one called Clue, Flow, F-L-O, Fit Our Woman, which for me is something that Georgie Broomvell's kind of developed, which is very educational as well. I think that's a very good kind of app. It gives you recipes and foods that you could have at different stages of the cycle. There's another one, simple name, Cycle Tracking App, which I believe can be synced to an iWatch as well. So again, I encourage any player and staff working with a player, like whether you're male or not, to get the app and actually see the information that you can gain from it. You know, again, as a male, obviously you're not having kind of menstrual cycle, not having a period, but you can still put the dates in and see what information you get back. And I think that then allows you to see what is your typical cycle length, track and log your symptoms. Also, you know, is the player regular? Because, you know, again, I think a lot of things we're talking about here are things that we can comfortably advise the player, but I think if there's anything from a health perspective or health issue, then that player has to be, you know, directed to a medical professional. We're not, you know, to their doctor. We're not pertaining to be doctors here, but, you know, I think recovery, sleep, nutrition, hydration, strength, condition are things that as practitioners we can advise the players on. When it becomes anything, you know, more medical or severe, then the player for sure should be directed towards their doctor.
So I'm just thinking there, if I'm a youngish player and I'm starting to track my symptoms, and by the way, it don't even just have to be a player, like as you pointed out, it could just be any female, player or not player. But is there a risk of, how would I describe it, thinking that I've got a certain symptom, but I haven't really? So if I don't really know myself or know my body that well yet, or I heard that my friend gets like stomach cramps, so like, yeah, I think I'm getting some stomach cramps as well. And like, and then it plays like psychological, you think you're getting it because you had it last month, so I think I've got it this month. Is there an element of that might happen?
I guess so, but again, I guess that's with anything in life. Like they could, you know, I think that, you know, that could be similar, that you've done a hard training session and or played a match, and a player from a fatigue or muscle soreness is reporting the same as what they did last game or their teammate does. So yes, but what I would say is over kind of tracking over more kind of menstrual cycles, I think that would kind of refine, and I think that would then, you know, I think then that would serve as a conversation point with a player. You know, you're getting really bad kind of menstrual cramps. You know, these are some of the foods, the anti-inflammatory foods that you could consume that potentially can help reduce that. So again, I think it opens a conversation, and I think that's with any tracking, whether it's wellness, whether it's training, whether it's anything related to their football, technical, tactical. For me, any of that always starts a conversation. I think there's none of that, like none of that paper, pencil or apps or anything online is ever a substitute for the kind of verbal with a player or the visual with a player. So again, I think the self-reporting is one thing, but like I say, it starts a conversation to then explore it in a bit more detail.
Sorry, I'm just listening to that, Dawn. Obviously, we're not at a stage yet with my under-13s where we're tracking that sort of thing. I mean, we're at a stage where we've just managed to agree with the club that we're allowed access to the toilets during training because we've got girls that are just about to go through this sort of the menstrual cycle, and they may or may not be at that stage yet. Just thinking from us, is there any sort of little things that we could do during training or games that would help with that sort of thing?
I mean, again, I think from that perspective, it's trying to, again, whether it's part of your wellness, but trying to pick out any, I don't know, kind of any symptoms that you might see with a player. Like, are you noticing that a player is less coordinated? Are they not concentrating? Are they more tired, you know, more sleepy? Again, I guess, I think, again, it's, you know, is there anything like that that you're noticing with a player? And then, you know, is that your own almost kind of individual logbook that you at the end of a session have noticed this in this player? And then, you know, if you're tracking that over time, you almost have your own, if you like, kind of menstrual cycle tracker of each player. So again, I think it's just looking for any changes. Like, we have had coaches, and I think Emma Hayes spoke about it on a podcast, where the goalkeeper coach there noticed a lack of coordination of Carly Telford, and with that they then gave her a strategy with carbohydrate gel to kind of increase a concentration at a certain time in the menstrual cycle. So again, I think it's, are you noticing anything? Are you noticing the players more fatigued, more tired, more sore? Is it the group? You know, if it's all the players, it could just be linked to the match. It could be linked to your training session. If it's just one player or a couple of players, again, you know, potentially it is linked to the menstrual cycle. But again, I think it comes back to what we said at the very start, like, know your players. And again, the more you know them, the more you spot kind of habits or changes in their coordination or, you know, anything like that. You know, it again, touches on the ball. Again, if you know a player and you know their technical ability, and suddenly they're a bit less coordinated, again, you know, is that happening at the same time kind of every month? So again, I think it's just spotting things like that with your players.
That was really useful. Sorry, I just wanted to add, obviously, for us with that, is there anything that we could do in terms of giving them more breaks in training, making sure they're drinking more? Is that something that we need to be thinking about?
Again, I think they're probably good kind of practices anyway, to make sure, obviously, depending on the environment, that the freezing cold weather at the minute, there's less of a need for that hydration piece. But again, for me, that probably comes back a little bit in terms of the conditioning of the players, in terms of what is the strength work you do with them? Are you doing just good general, like, injury prevention strategies? Are you doing a good warm up? Are you doing some coordination drills? Are you doing good speed drills? So again, I think it comes back to what is the ground and work that you do with those players to make sure they're actually just not at an injury risk anyway, and they are well conditioned. So again, I think it depends what is your overarching kind of conditioning program with the players. Again, I think with females, I think again, it's got better, but for me, even more so, like, the strength work, the injury prevention work is just really important to be doing that.
Dawn, sorry, just to consider something then, because we spoke before we went on air about the idea of coaches altering their coaching practice, and Dan's come up with some really good questions there around, like, the reality of grassroots coaching. So generally speaking, to build on what Dan's asked you there, for coaches in any context, is there stuff that we should be doing differently? Or is it more of a case of doing the basics really well anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I don't think we know enough in the research or the literature to change training based on the menstrual cycle right now. I think the other challenge, and this was probably one reason where for many years I didn't know how to kind of start with this topic in terms of introducing it with a squad of 20, 25 players. I think, again, it's unrealistic to think that with 20 players in your group that you can really tailor training to each one of those players, because they're all at different stages and all at different kind of levels of symptoms and severity. I think it comes back to the piece of the pre-work and the prevention, in that if you've got a really good injury prevention model, you're doing some good strength work with the players, the players are conditioned, you've covered that element. I think the other piece then is that symptom management piece, that again, if you've given the players management plan strategies to reduce the impact of some of those symptoms, then they're more recovered and they're in a position where they can perform. So again, I think it's all of that prevention work before the player gets on the pitch, because ultimately, whether it's track and field, whether it's football, you know, gold medals have been won, lost at any stage of the menstrual cycle. You know, that's evident in track and field. Also, you know, there was the media article that came out after the US won the World Cup in 2019. And one of the headlines was that Rose Lavelle was a player that typically had a lot of menstrual cycle symptoms. And, you know, we had her following kind of a management plan, symptom management plan. And she started a period on the day of the World Cup final and scored a goal. So again, it's, you know, for me, for any player, you can score a goal then, you can perform. You know, we have a duty in terms of the preparation of the players to not make this something that tells a coach they can or can't select a player. This shouldn't stop a player from performing. So again, for me, it's all about the management, the prevention before the player even gets to the pitch, so that they're in a position where they can perform because they're prepared and they're recovered.
So, sorry, go on, Abs, you go.
No, you go. Go on.
I'm just going to pick up on some of the stuff you said around, like, the strength and warm-ups and just generally having a robust strength and conditioning program. And I guess this links more into your context, Abby, at WSL Academy, because I know it's something we've spoken about a lot around, you know, what does a good warm-up look like? Yeah. Like, how is the physical integrated throughout the session? So I'm just wondering, all the stuff that Dawn said there around that side of coaching practice, I'm guessing it's like triggered you to be thinking about quite a lot in your context with the menstrual cycle as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously we're fortunate to have an FSNC coach with us at most sessions. The girls will have gym programs, will be in the gym doing stuff. It's sometimes before training and sometimes it'd be post-pitch training session based on timetables or kind of where it fits in the week. And obviously warm-ups, and like Amy said, Amy's been down at a couple of sessions and us having conversations around why are they doing that? Why does a warm-up look like that? And actually trying to open up some dialogue. I think sometimes as technical staff, they go and do their stuff with the S&C coach, and then we go and pick up the stuff with the technical, from a technical side. But actually, how do we really start to link the two in together? I think it probably happens more from a first team environment when they're in full time. But yeah, would like your thoughts on that, and kind of what does good look like, I guess, really?
I mean, I think ultimately it would be part of the almost the long-term play development model that you've got in place. And, you know, specifically at what ages does the player need to be kind of checking off certain like physical markers? Also, obviously, that is hand in hand with a technical tactical. For me, I think a big one on the women's side, on the female side, is just making sure the players like technique is good, that they've got good runner mechanics, that their deceleration, acceleration technique is optimal. Because again, you know, you look at, you know, if we're to kind of use ACL injuries as an example, probably majority of those actually happen without contact. And again, it tends to be deceleration or change of direction type movement. So again, you know, I think making sure that you cover those elements outside of the football in an isolated manner before the player then kind of puts that into the football. So, you know, I think they're big things. And I think if many of us as practitioners look at what we do, I think we do a lot on the acceleration, maybe less so on the deceleration mechanics. So I think, you know, they're ones, I think, good knee stability, proprioception type activities, again, just to strengthen kind of you know, muscles obviously in the leg anyway, but kind of around the knees and that kind of thing is important. But yeah, I think the big thing again is just technique and making sure players have got good technique in all of the physical movements that they do, like that basic physical literacy.
Mm-hmm. No, great. And I guess that regardless as well what level and age you're working at, you can still do fun XL, DCL games. And I'm sure, Dan, you do stuff like that with your girls and kind of see grassroots coaches doing that. And I guess if we can start that technique and some of those habits from a younger age, whether that's just in fun tag games or whatever that might look like, it helps for when they go up through the pathway and I guess come to kind of without us having to critique maybe technique because they've worked on that lower down the pathway. And I guess you've like given us some like top tips, I guess, as we've kind of gone through the podcast. But from all the kind of studying and practicing you've done in the area, Dawn, in this kind of area, is there any lessons you've learned or watch outs for coaches, I guess, when we kind of talk around this topic?
I mean, I think, again, for me, the massive bit is the education of doing your own kind of self-learning prior to even broaching it with, you know, kind of with the players or with the parents or with the other staff that you work with. I think that's one thing. I think then, you know, knowing the players and the sensitivity of the area and making it a safe environment and, you know, not something where a player is going to get ridiculed if they say they've had a certain symptom. I think that is really important because, you know, if that happens once, then potentially you've lost the trust of that whole group and nobody is ever going to speak about it. And then I think, yeah, like linked into your own education, I think, you know, kind of listening to other podcasts that are out there, read more around it. And then just really monitoring those individual players in terms of their symptoms, their severity, supporting them with strategies that might help reduce some of those. So, again, if you've got a player who's reporting a lower back pain, and again, we commonly see some of our players report that at a certain stage, can they work with a physio on a lower back protocol, like a stretching protocol? And, you know, again, you start thinking, well, actually, a lower back stretching could be good for every player. So, again, it could be something where actually you don't just have to do it for Jane because she's experiencing it. Actually, it could be the whole group are doing it as part of their cool down at a certain stage. You know, again, if players have got sore muscles or more fatigue, promoting kind of anti-inflammatory foods such as berries, ginger, spinach, kale, salmon, they're just good kind of nutrition. And again, you start thinking, actually, they're just good things you should eat every day. So again, it comes back to basic education. If a player's more fatigued, what's their sleep like? Are they on their phone or on a tablet at nighttime when they go to bed? And obviously that light emission is actually slowing down. I mean, yes, some of us, I'm probably guilty of it, but some of that then slows down kind of when you get to sleep. What is their recovery like? So again, you know, if a player is more anxious or they have disturbed mood state in the few days before, you know, is there kind of some kind of psychology support or meditation? Or again, there's other apps out there, you know, Headspace is an app that has so many different topics in there that players can use and get into. But, you know, even meditation is something where I think if we think about recovery, most of us think about the physical recovery. We don't always naturally think about the psychology recovery. And that is such an important piece of whole mental well-being. Like this year alone, you know, in 2020 has been a challenge for so many reasons. And I think the mental wellness, mental well-being of players is so important. So again, promoting certain apps that help with meditation or mental relaxation. And, you know, again, if you strip away the menstrual cycle from all of those areas, they're just good habits of the general population, and then even more so anybody involved in sport.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Well, last question from me, just the last one. You've mentioned around the four phases. Is there anywhere where coaches can kind of see which are the general things, appreciating that every athlete's different, but and some might drop in across phases, but for a coach to be able to go and look at that and go, okay, here's phase one, two and three and four, so here are some of the common things, just considering some of the coaches we work with maybe haven't got loads of time to try and plot, so just thinking around like time management for coaches really.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I think firstly, in terms of the 2-3 phase model, Emma Ross wrote an article, a position statement with Bases, kind of outlining a little bit around the 2-3 kind of phases. And then I think, again, the one proposed by Georgie Broomvels with the four phases. She outlines that in the app that she's developed with the company Orico called Fit Our Woman. So Fit Our Woman. And within that, for me, again, there's a lot of education. There's some background around the physiology of the different phases, recipes, nutrition that you could try at the different phases. So again, I just think that is a real good resource, and it's quite applied and it's easy reading. That for me, probably the language is easy, that anybody could follow that. So I think they're probably two ones looking at the 2-3 phases, but then also the proposed four phase model by Georgie.
Right, you touched on it quite a lot earlier in terms of like the coaches understanding and players understanding, but I just wanted to see sort of what you thought in terms of how important is it for parents, especially of young players and young girls, that they're aware of just how important this everyday well-being and sort of healthy lifestyles are for girls' symptoms and girls' cycles.
For me, it's crucial, like especially for those players that rely on their parents, you know, to cook their food or kind of that element, or to, you know, help with a bedtime routine. You know, again, I think good sleep, a lot of the time is about just having a good routine before you go to bed. And again, you know, research shows that if you do have that good routine before you go to bed, like your sleep is better and better quality. But yeah, I think parents are crucial. And I think that's where we talk about the whole education piece. And I think it's education of us as coaches, education of the players, education of the wider support staff kind of around the group. Again, with the England senior women's team, we've done education with a whole staff group. So again, you know, kind of they're aware, and some of the other female staff in that group have taken on board some of the kind of symptom management plans that we've done, and have, you know, kind of found that they've improved their symptoms and reduced them. And then I think the other element then is the parents. So anybody, for me, who is part of the support bubble, you know, social, kind of the hands-on with a club at school, I think have an important say in terms of the player and supporting them.
So I guess just to summarise on that part then around like coaching practice, it's kind of just an ongoing education piece for everyone to learn more. So particularly for coaches to learn more in order to help their players to come up with strategies to like man ultimately with the end goal of the players self-managing and self-regulating their own cycle and symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ultimately about promoting good recovery strategies. So good good recovery, ensuring good sleep, you know, good nutritional habits. And then I think alongside the monitoring of the individual symptoms, like, you know, if a player does have the change of mood state or the lower back pain, again, you know, for those players that might be that individualized, okay, he's kind of a wellness app or a meditation app that you could use to reduce that anxiety or the kind of mood state change. If somebody's got a lower sore back, again, this is a good protocol that we think, you know, Dan, you could develop that kind of protocol yourself. Here's three or four exercises you can do if you feel like your back sore, or you know at that stage of the month you do get that lower back pain. Again, I think it's all about being the proactive, because if you're already experiencing the symptom, it's already having a negative impact. Whereas if you can get your strategy in place beforehand, then hopefully you can prevent the symptom or the severity of them. Like, we're not going to, you know, let's not think we're going to take away all the symptoms. That's not going to happen. But for sure, we can reduce the severity of the symptoms and the impact on the performance for the players.
Do you know what? I've really, really enjoyed this conversation, and it's definitely helped me to make sense of something which I probably perceived as extremely complex, and it probably is, but actually you've been able to put it into a real simple context for us in terms of the players that we work with. And yeah, loads of stuff to come out of that conversation. So thanks, Dawn. And also thanks to Abby and Dan as well, because like, it's not easy, is it, to talk about this? And that's the whole point why we're talking about it. So really, really appreciate everyone's openness and sharing their knowledge. So I just wanted to reiterate, Dawn's mentioned the Fit Our Woman app as somewhere to go to for some further education on the area. in addition to lots of other apps that Dawn's mentioned as well. And also there's the Female Athlete podcast, which I believe you've appeared on that, Dawn. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I haven't.
I am wrong. Okay. I know they did an episode on the menstrual cycle.
Karen Carney was on an episode, which I don't know. That, I mean, yeah, Karen Carney was on an episode speaking about menstrual cycle and how she felt throughout her career that the symptoms she had. But again, you know, she obviously retired 2019, and she spoke about it after she had retired.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So there's some further stuff for coaches if you're interested in finding out more. But also, like, hopefully this podcast triggers you guys to spark up conversations with other coaches or coach developers in the area, because I guess it's just about talking about it to start with, isn't it? And feeling comfortable and having those honest discussions and open discussions with each other. So thanks to everyone. We'll see you all soon.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.